Wednesday Night Rugby
on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now we're joined by Liam Toland and Keith Wood. You're there, lads.
How are you doing, Joe?
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Very well, very well, very well. We have much to discuss. Can I make an existential start to the rugby slot this Wednesday evening, if that's okay?
Go on.
Okay, so we had Rob Kearney on the show on Monday. I thought he was really good, really interesting on a whole heap of things. So he's got his one-year contract. He was looking for 2 years. Him and his father negotiate the contracts, interestingly, actually, which was a takeaway. And he was interested in a whole host of things, including what he's going to do when he retires from rugby and his sense that he'll never be able to fully replace it. And I count you as two men who've gone on to have full and interesting lives post-rugby. So I just want to play a short clip of Kearney talking about this, and I'll get your thoughts.
I've no idea what I'm going to do after.
Again, these are the false assumptions. I just thought, well, the pub business and you're... I thought this guy knows where he's going long term.
I always remember being in the back of a bus on the way to Croke Park for a captain's run, I think, in 2009. And there was four or five lads behind me. Mm-hmm. I'd been 33 at the time, my age. And they were all freaking out about what they were going to do after rugby.
Sure.
So I made myself a promise there and then that I'd finish my degree, got a master's in business, try and get involved in a few different businesses outside of rugby, so when the time does come that I'm in my last couple of years, that I can really just enjoy it and savor every little moment of it without having to worry too much about what's coming after. Just try and enjoy the moment that I'm in.
And has it transpired that way?
Yeah, it has.
You're not the guy freaking out now at the back of the bus?
No, I still don't know what I'm going to do.
Right.
But at least I've got enough things that... Yeah, I might not be, overly passionate, to the point that you're getting up every single day with this massive purpose.
Which you have now. That's a rugby player.
Now. Yeah. And for me, that is the biggest challenge for rugby players. And it's going to be my biggest challenge.
Well, I think you have to accept you're not going to find that thing. Like, this is it.
Yeah, I asked Stuart Lancaster at a great meeting with him last week. We were chatting for about an hour and a half, and he was talking a little bit about life after rugby, and I said, do you think I should just accept that when rugby's over that I'm never going to get that same level of satisfaction again? And he said no, interestingly. And I tried to argue the case that nothing is ever going to be better than this, but he said that there's lots of other different ways to become really passionate about something.
Hmm.
But I'm unconvinced.
I'm unconvinced too, yeah. I would think.
And yeah, it depends. If you've... Listen, running out in front of 80,000 people.
With your mates.
Singing with your mates, singing the national anthem, beating the All Blacks in Dublin.
Hmm.
I don't know how something is going to get better.
It's going to be a hell of a spreadsheet that you're going to have to see. Or
yeah, exactly. But listen, we'll worry about that when it comes.
Part of an interesting chat. You can podcast the full interview or get it on YouTube. Well, Liam Toland, is this as good as it gets?
Well, it's funny, Joe, because when you're listening to a player like Rob Kearney, in some instances, it's hard to feel sorry for someone who's a test lion, who's achieved so much he has in the game, and just his description running out into Croke Park in front of 80,000 people. And that's probably where the problem is, because for most people listening to that, we're probably saying, gee, they give the right leg, in fact, to the left leg, to be able to have even a portion of what Rob Kearney has achieved. But he is an interesting guy because on top of his stellar career, he's been chairman of the Rugby Players Ireland, which is formerly IRUPA, and he's at the heart of driving for this particular problem, which is, and now you mentioned myself and Keith, for most of us that are involved in post-rugby, we started the game very much as amateurs, and obviously Keith went on to an illustrious career as a professional. And for most of us who finished playing professional rugby, we had that hint of what life was really like. So Rob Kearney and his peers are very much the new draft of guys who have come in from school, have gone into the academies, have come out of that. In his case, he didn't spend too long in the academies. He was bounced straight into the higher echelons. And it's a real issue. It's a real problem. Now, for your casual listener, they might not understand that. But like Rob Kearney and many other internationals with 100-plus caps know that they're brilliant international rugby players. What they don't know is how to put on a suit on a Monday morning at 8 o'clock, get into a Ford Golf or a Golf or Volkswagen Golf, and go out and start working. Going into an office, that environment, it's completely alien to them. And all their peers that they would have been in college with have moved on into higher echelons of careers, etc. So it's a real issue, and it's not to be laughed at, it's not to be scoffed at. And although I said tongue in cheek, it's hard to feel sorry for them. But in this instance, it really is. It's a real, tangible challenge that lots of our athletes, whether they're rugby players or not, and that's almost irrelevant, really struggle in their early, mid to late 30s to find themselves and find that rhythm that gives them value, meaning and well-being. And it's a real issue.
Yeah. And as he said himself, Keith, he will, I'm sure, get the hang of putting on a suit. It's the sense of real purpose and the intense passion that you have for your current career, in his case, which is rugby and all the buzz that comes with it. How can you replicate that level of passion? He's almost, you know, Stuart Lancaster's trying to talk him round, but I think he's starting to smell which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that too. I mean, I looked at it and I made the assumption very early before I retired that you weren't going to get that buzz again. And it's funny, he touched on it, you know, winning against the All Blacks, which I never had the chance to do. But I can tell you that there were days when you jog up those old steps into Lansdowne Road and the place would go ballistic as the team ran out onto the field. You'd say, my God, this is just the most extraordinary feeling to actually be part of, and that noise is there for what they hope you might be able to go and do on the field in a while. That's pretty tantalizing and an amazing feeling to have. And I don't know that it's replicated, but I think that's one part of it. And I don't know that you don't have a right to be the best in the world at everything that you do either. So when the guys who are in very rarefied space, you know, they're, you know, playing for their country and they're in a tiny one percentile of rugby players, I think it's a privilege, and I think they should accept it as being a privilege and hope that the next thing that they do, that they love it. It doesn't have to give that same buzz or that same idea. And just on a little flip of it, so you're going to be existential, you said at the start. I have a really good friend of mine, an Austrian friend of mine. He's in his 60s. And his view is, well, to be honest, youth doesn't really finish until you're 30. And you have to start your life now because people are living much longer and their working life could be 30 or 40 years. They could be living till they're 90, 95. And so, you know, in many respects, and I'll go back to that point of privilege, for somebody who's managed to play professional sport for a long period of time, who hopefully has made and kept a lot of money, who gets a cracking tax break when it finishes, they're set up to not panic. You know, that idea of panicking is, it can be quite scary to start something new, but they could start something new and be ready in 4 or 5 years' time and still be in a good position under which to do so. So they just have to find something that they'd like to do. That actually is the difficulty, because there's a bit of a panic that you think, well, really, I need to be a success immediately. And they kind of forget the fact that they started playing rugby when they were 8 years of age and they've had 20 years of it, maybe 15 of us or 10 or 12 of us as a professional, and they've been getting better because they're working at it. It takes a period of time to be good at anything.
Lean, you forged a very successful career as well. Did you have the sense of panic when the day came?
Well, see, again, myself and Keith are of the same age, although we argued this over the airways consistently, but we're the same age and we've came into it in around the same time where when we were in our teens, someone asked you, what would you want to be in your grow up? And in most cases, it's like an engineer, a teacher, or whatever. It wasn't a professional player. So our journey in professional sport started literally when the manager of the team said, we're gone professional now. Whereas kids now at the age of 10 and 12 are announcing this to their, in my case, my nephews are saying it to me, I'm going to play for Ireland. That's my career. So I was lucky in that I went in, myself and Keith actually shared university for a period of time together. We were studying the same course. But then I went into the Defence Force and became an Army officer, and I got leave of absence. And when I came back, which is very unusual, I had a career to go back into.
Yeah, okay.
That's all in the past now. So from my point of view, the transition. But if you talk to guys who, I was amazed when I spoke to my peers in that time around the country, the, in the four provinces, who were either multiple caps or they may not have even had that, and they were really worried. Like, they had no idea what they were facing into, and there was a real self-doubt about what it is. Now, for many, they come from, like, good homes and good backgrounds and good education and stuff, and the cards are stacked in their favour. But there's some who aren't quite fitting that, and they really question themselves. And it's a really vulnerable time for any elite athlete to go back in mid-30s to say, and I accept what Keith is saying, there may be a fallback of a nest egg of some amount of money, but an awful lot of these players don't have that amount of money. Mm. They don't have, like, your soccer premiership type of money. In fact, a very modest amount of money. It's a great start. Remember, they're starting 15 years behind their peers in terms of they would have gone to college. So it really is a worrying time for an awful lot. And I think it's part of the jigsaw that needs... And I know Rugby Players Ireland are quite strong in it, and that's going back, ironically, where the chairman of that is Rob Kearney himself. So he would be at the coalface in his particular instance. But there's huge vulnerability. And over time, that may permeate itself up, and we might hear some really tough stories. And it's important that we look after these guys when they come out, that fellas like myself or Keith are mentoring them in a sense. Rupa or the rugby players are looking after them, but society in general understands that they're vulnerable in some cases.
No, very true. And again, I think we've all really listened to you there when you've tried to emphasise several times that you and Keith are about the same age. We've definitely taken that on board. You've made that clear to us.
But thank you very much.
Yeah, no, that's
I'm
good.
Trying to figure out. I think Liam is significantly older. I'm not sure about that.
When you say significant, you mean a matter of hours or weeks?
Yeah, it could be a couple of weeks, I think. Yeah.
Rob Kearney, speaking of Rob Kearney, was probably lucky to stay on the pitch at Celtic Park. Liam, you were there, I was watching on TV. It was pretty clear, even just through your commentary alone, that you thoroughly enjoyed the whole spectacle.
It was a privilege, Joe, because to walk into the famous Glasgow soccer ground that is, and it only ever had one other rugby match in history, which is 100 years ago, a rugby league game. So it's a real moment of time. You're in the presence of history, you're in the presence of greatness. I loved it. If it was a dry day, it would have been an absolute belter of a match, because that was the way it was set up. And as the rain, like, I don't know, did it come across on TV, but the rain bucketed it down. And immediately that happened, in around the same time, Leinster got their noses in front. And then everything became all Leinster. They knew, Glasgow had the majority of possession, 51-49, but the territory became, once Leinster were ahead, once the rain stepped in, Leinster started winning the battle of territory, and they made it all Glasgow's problem. And Glasgow simply didn't get the rewards for some of the quality play that they had through their line-out, through their scrum, and other parts of it again. But it was a very clever performance from Leinster, and their line-out more became exceptionally important in other aspects of the game as well. I loved it. The couple of injuries slow down the tempo, and you mentioned Rob Kearney there. I felt it should have been a bigger card than was given, because, you know, whether it's a timing issue or not, I think we need to protect the player that gets in. And if you're not going to win the aerial battle, when you're arriving into the air, if you're jumping slightly after the other player, the law of the lever kicks in. You're going to hit him below his hips, most likely, and then he's going to pivot around, and then he's going to land, and he's going to get into trouble. So if you don't win that battle, if you don't get up chest on chest, well, then you have to avoid it. And that comes down to the player. It's a difficult one, and we'll see from time to time that the timing gets wrong. But I think the punishment should be really severe to really encourage players to avoid. If you're not going to get into the air chest on chest, you have to avoid the air then altogether, because otherwise the player gets badly injured. Yeah. But I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Johnny Sexton, Keith, in his post-match comments, talked about having to adapt to the weather conditions, that ultimately was the challenge that Leinster faced. And Rob Kearney, in that same interview on Monday, talked about the game having an element of cup rugby from the Leinster perspective. And in the second half in particular, even with about 44% possession, Leinster had 73% territory, and they weren't afraid to squeeze Glasgow. Did you always feel, watching it, that Leinster had the know-how to win this one?
I felt they were in control of the game,
right,
and they do have the know-how. I still thought there was a chance for Glasgow because they had an ability. I thought that diminished when Hogg went off injured. It was a red card. It wasn't, but it should have been. I also thought the hit on McGrath earlier on warranted warranted. I felt it even warranted a red card. It was only shown a couple of times on the telly. It could have been on again. I just thought it was blindsided. I didn't like it. Didn't like the look of it at all.
And sorry to interrupt. What about Nigel Owens's line to Fraser Brown, where he's projecting on Fraser Brown, mind reading, saying, "Well, you thought he had the ball, didn't you?" Almost was his line.
Yeah, I actually thought Nigel had he is a very assertive referee, and I actually really like him as a referee. But I thought in both those instances he got it wrong. Mm. It would be my read on it. For the game, Glasgow came to play and Leinster came to win the game. And I know exactly what team I'd rather have been on. Yeah. And it did come across in the television. Sometimes you get a good camera angle that just shows you how bad the rain is. I thought some of the level of control that Leinster had in that game was phenomenal. And yes, it was Cup Rugby, but I thought it was a great performance to get a win. We don't see that style. We have seen Leinster play that. I love the fact that they can play that style, but that's not what they're known for.
Mm.
But I thought they played really well and were they just knew what it was to win, and they were very comfortable in how they played. I still felt there's an opportunity for Glasgow to pull something out of the hat because they've had that ability for the last couple of years. And I think it could have been a damn sight tighter if it had been dry.
Right, OK. Were Glasgow, Liam, did they not adapt to the conditions? Do they have a plan B? Were they right to approach it the way they did?
I see. If you look at, you mentioned there the 73%. Like, Glasgow had beat 25 Leinster defenders. Leinster beat 10. So all the stats feed into the fact that, and we were watching it live, you could see that when Glasgow came, they had a very strong game plan, certainly in the opening 15 minutes, where they were exposing maybe in behind James Lowe. They kept keeping the ball in play, so they were avoiding the Leinster line-out, and most importantly, the Leinster line-out maul, and they were putting it in behind James Lowe. And once Leinster got ahead, all of a sudden, everything changed, because that meant straight away Leinster saying, look, we'll make it your problem. We know what you're going to try to do. You're going to try and run, and you're going to beat defenders, which they did, 25 versus 10. But an awful lot of that was occurring in their own 22 and just outside their 22. So Leinster were perfectly happy to allow that to happen. And you look at Ringrose went in for some massive big man and ball hits and sometimes made it and sometimes it spilled off. And all of a sudden, Glasgow's running game got front foot ball. But ultimately, Leinster played the Cup Rugby, they played into the far corners, and they allowed Glasgow to play away. But in those conditions, it was going to be very, very difficult. Big defence. I think Leinster certainly out-tackled them in terms of count and that sort of stuff. The red card at the end, you know, when you think that Stuart Hogg went off, like how the yellow card, I think there was a 4 minute at the very end that Rob Kearney came back in. Glasgow, certainly, you could feel the tempo of the crowd and you feel the tempo of the team. If they had Stuart Hogg on that stage and had Kearney been off, then certainly the result could have been threatened more. But it was a very clever performance from Leinster. And all the things you'd have predicted coming into it, like the line-up maul, slowing down the pace of the game wherever they could. It was a super, super performance and well-deserved outcome for them.
The news came through on Monday. Sean O'Brien would not be part of the 44-man World Cup squad, the initial one. He will be having a hip resurfacing operation, which is very similar to what Andy Murray has undergone. And there'll be a metal cap around the ball in his hip socket. And he's hopeful, he's certainly hopeful in 6 months' time or so that he'll be back and playing for London Irish pain-free. But we certainly won't see him at a World Cup. Back rows in Joe Schmidt's squad, Jack Conan, Jordy Murphy, Tommy O'Donnell, Peter Omani, Rhys Ruddock, CJ Stander and Josh van der Fleer. There is a general sense that there's a bit of a battle between, well, I was reading Rhys Ruddock, Jordy Murphy, Tommy O'Donnell, although I would presume, and Brian O'Driscoll said it on Monday, that Jordy Murphy is in pole position there to be back up at number 7 to Josh van der Fleer. It's still a pretty competitive area, actually, Keith, when you look at it.
It is, but I think Sean O'Brien has been our go-to man for 10 years and has been phenomenal for 10 years. Kind of, it's hard to view World Cups without him. And I know people are saying, yes, he's been diminished. But I think this hip injury may have been there for a period of time. He has been struggling manfully to try and get in play. But you talk to any of the players that play with him, they love having him on the field with them. It isn't just for the play. It's also for his chat and his ability to get the players to up their game around him, which is good. Levy, for me, is the future, but he's a future that's having a serious injury and a serious recuperation. So I think it's a stunning amount of players that we have there, because we're missing our two best.
Yeah.
And though I have to say, every time I've watched Van der Flier play, I'm kind of a bit taken with the fact that, Jesus, he's like a bloody engine. He doesn't stop at any stage. I love the fact his performance over the last 2 weeks, he comes back and he plays brilliantly in the first game. I think that's doable for a lot of players, but to then do it again in the final, I thought that was pretty extraordinary. Mm. And to be able to back it up, because sure, he had to be in mincemeat having not played a game for, you know, coming back from injury, playing at the standard he had, been stuck into every single bit of contact of the previous week, to still back it up this week. I think that's a great mark for him. So, look, I think we're blessed to have had those three. After that, there's a different level, I think.
Yeah, okay. Interestingly, actually, I mentioned Brian Driscoll was in on Monday, Liam, and he felt that with regard to the number eight position, that even just over the weekend, Jack Conan's performance over the weekend, the baton in his mind had probably passed from CJ Stander to Jack Conan, which is a big enough statement. How likely is that to happen come Japan time?
It's very difficult to know, but if you take the last two weekends, John, you take the Munster-Leinster game where Leinster won the semi-final against Munster. Like, the Leinster back row was certainly a good number of degrees better as a unit than the Munster back row. CJ Stander was playing at seven that day, and I don't think that was a good use of his resources. Peter Mahoney was certainly relatively quiet. In terms of general footballing sense, I think Jack Conan showed in the final last weekend how he can really dig into the trenches. Yeah. And there was a number of really beautiful, subtle offloads that he made as well. So in other words, there was a couple of kickoffs where he caught, and there was some heavy traffic coming his way. He pivots, he jocks, and he just pops it off to the blindside winger, who adds 5-6 cheap yards onto it. He's the same ability around the breakdown or around the back row of a scrum. And Leinster's scrum didn't dominate, certainly in the outer edges of the game, but he has the ability to get those offloads away again. He creates opportunities for others. And what's been very impressive in the last 2 weeks around Conan is he's able to mix it up physically as well. I think, personally, having watched him, that the team might benefit more, but it depends on what Joe Schmidt wants to do in terms of his tactics. Okay. But if you're looking for a guy to give opportunities to other players, then Jack Conan certainly is it, and he definitely proved that he can live in the trenches as well. So a really good 2 weeks for me for Conan.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, we're here with Keith Wood and Liam Toland. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Jacob Stockdale had been in town, Keith, the last couple of days talking to the media, and he was saying he's not so sure what Joe Schmidt thinks, but he has certainly enjoyed playing fullback for Ulster over the last couple of weeks. More enjoyment there, ball in hands, more. I feel more comfortable there. He was asked, if you had to pick just one jersey, 11 or 15, what would you pick? And he said 15. Will he end up there ultimately, do you think?
I don't know. That's a horrible question to ask a young fella, you know.
He shouldn't have answered.
Well, yeah, no, but you know what? There's something incredibly refreshing about his answers. I didn't see everything that he said this week, but he kind of slagged himself off a couple of times. And, you know, there's a lovely... you want to hear a proper answer. You don't want to hear just a proper orchestrated answer in many ways, you know. But... I don't know whether he's a 15. I haven't seen him play enough at 15 to say that he's a 15. I do know that he knows where the line is.
Yeah.
And he still has a huge amount to learn. And I think there's something that we kind of sidestepped a little with Joe Schmidt, that Stockdale has made plenty of mistakes in his career so far, but he's been allowed to make them in an Ireland jersey because of the quality he has in getting over the try line. And that didn't always happen in times past. You'd say, well, he's missed a couple of tackles, you mightn't pick him. The guy knows how to score.
Liam, any thoughts on Stockdale 15?
It's very interesting, because certainly if you look back at the... I suppose you got to look at feeding into the World Cup, you've got to look at who are world-class, international-class players. And just because they might dip in their province doesn't mean that they're not more than worthy of stepping into Ireland team. And we've seen that down the years. Of course we have. But Stockdale's performance against Glasgow, like, he was very, very... What's the correct word? He certainly was not setting the world alight, put it that way. He looked lumbering and maybe even tired. So maybe the summer break would suit him and others. But I look at other guys like Andrew Conway, and I said, this guy is just, like, he gives you 10 out of 10 every single performance. Is he going to be a match winner like a James Lowe or a Stockdale? Well, that's up to the coach to decide. But he has the pleasure of, it's two fullbacks and five wingers in that World Cup squad, and there's some serious quality, like world-class line breakers like Jordan Larmour, and then there's some brilliant players like Keith Earls and Andrew Conway. It's going to be very, very interesting. But if Stockdale doesn't continue to improve, could come against him, defensively especially.
Mm. There wasn't, like, major headline news, as there doesn't tend to be when there's a squad of this size named. It was interesting that Jean Kleyn was brought in, and Mike Haley as well. Like, Kleyn will just... become qualified in advance of those warm-up games. Mike Haley has been qualified the whole time, courtesy of his grandmother, who's from Kerry, but he's been brought in for a look anyway. James Ryan, Devon Toner, Ian Henderson and Tadhg Byrne most likely will travel as the second-row pairing, with Ulton Delan kind of peering very closely in. Has Quinn Roo done something wrong that I'm not aware of, Keith? He's not in the squad at all.
Well, I don't know whether he has, and he gets a lot of credit from Joe Schmidt all the time. But my view on Jean Kleyn is... Joe Schmidt doesn't know him. Okay. He hasn't seen an awful lot of him. He wants to see him, what it's like in that white hat element. And I think the same, actually, for Haley, because he needs to be seen in the squad. He needs to see what's happening. Is Will Addison injured? I was trying to figure that out when the name came out. I was travelling during the week, but because I thought he was a bit of a shining star earlier on, and he's not. Haley has done well for Munster, but not extraordinarily well. So he's been solid.
Yeah.
He's bedded in. He's done some things that are fantastic. And some players just take a bit longer to settle in. And I think that could be the case with him. But he has undoubted skills. It's whether they fit into a Joe Schmidt type squad. So with both of those players in particular... Like, it's funny because you see Dave Kearney coming back in, and he's been out of it for a while with injury and whatever.
Yeah.
But he offers so much that Joe Schmidt knows he can rely on him.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to look at these two guys and say, do they have something I'm missing, or do they have something that they can actually go to a higher level if we put them into a Joe Schmidt structure?
Yeah. It is injury, back injury, which is paid to Will Addison, by the way. So that explains that.
So it's also like there's other names left out. You think it's Stuart McCluskey, like... I'm wondering, he must be disappointed not to be making a 44-man squad. Even Tom Farrell out of Connacht has had a fantastic season as well. So, like, I can imagine that there's going to be a lot of jostling for position between now and then, and that an awful lot of these guys, like Will Addison, you've mentioned there, obviously, but Stuart McCluskey, is that him written off by Joe Schmidt, or is that him being parked by Joe Schmidt? Mm. And, of course, we're not privy to those conversations as well. But there are some big, like Jack O'Donoghue out of Munster, another player that might feel a little disappointed not to have bounced up there, you know?
Yeah, and Addison had back surgery and was expected at that time to be fit for come World Cup time, but I don't know his level of fitness now or where he is in the pecking order. But there's a long way between now, even on June 16th when they all link up, and then from June 16th until the 22nd of September when they play Scotland. I mean, the number of injuries here, this thing could be unrecognisable, as everybody knows. So it's one of those pointless things to talk about in some respects. Just before you go, worth mentioning, Saracens Exeter Saturday at Twickenham, the Premiership final. Exeter in their fourth straight final. They've only won one, thanks largely to Saracens, who have won three in the past 4 years. Saracens are the best team in Europe. Keith, they displayed that again in Newcastle. I presume they'll beat Exeter.
I think so. I looked at the highlights of the two semi-finals. There were a gulf in class between both those teams and every other team in the Premiership. But I think the Saracens are on the climb, which is quite disturbing to see it. They just they are in total control of everything that they do. So I think it would require an awful lot for Exeter to get over them. So I think it's Saracens, definitely. Just on those players that are not in the squad, I can't see any guys going on any summer holiday this year.
No,
I think those guys, everybody within 55 or 60 players, Noel Murphy had the line that you're only ever an injury away. And, you know, you just need to be as sharp, because you might get one chance and it could be called into a training session and you could offer a spark that it has been missing for the previous 2 weeks. And you say, do you know what, we might take a punt on him. We've seen him before. And I just think it's a really interesting period of time for these guys, because we say there's a break, but it's not. There'll be a lot of work still will be done. It's how do they get refreshed?
Yeah,
because I will say, when we look back at all our players that we've talked about, even in this show, they've played a huge amount of rugby in the last 2 or 3 years. I want to see them fresh.
Yeah, no, it's true. And well, look, even come 2021, Keith, if you're hanging around South Africa, you might get a call up for the Lions if you're just anyway near the location. You know, that's the way that seems to work at the moment.
I'll bring the boots just in case. You know,
put me in. Right, fellas, thanks a mil. Appreciate it. Liam Tolan, Keith Wood, thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
Cheers,
Wednesday
Joe.
Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.